fasten your seatbelt, and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today, Route 51 is the road to the White House, an historic election just 2 days ago in which we put into office our first African-American president, redrew the standard red and blue electoral college map, extended the Democrats' control of the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives, and in Wisconsin handed the General Assembly over to the Democrats. Both houses of the state legislature and the governor's mansion now in their hands for the first time in decades. We have one-party rule in Washington and one-party rule in Madison. And today, well, we've got our own party on the airwaves, a panel of political analysts to make sense of what just happened, what it means for the future, and what it means for a world economy in crisis. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. James Lawrence is a professor emeritus of history at UW-Marathon County, a man who has been involved in Democratic Party politics for more than 40 years, and who recently helped Congressman Dave Obie with his autobiography. Bob Williams is the president of Ideas Associates, a public relations firm in Stevens Point, and a veteran Republican strategist who managed Lee Dreyfus's successful campaign for governor of Wisconsin. Mark Baldwin is the executive editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, and he is here to not only provide insight into the election results, but he's also here to help me question our two analysts. So we're sure you have opinions about the election of Barack Obama and the reshaping of Washington and Madison. Are you hopeful for the future? Are you afraid of the future? What about the historic nature of this contest that was just concluded 2 days ago? We want to hear from you. Our lines are open at 261-6371, 261-6371, or toll free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Before we start, let's listen to about a minute of what Barack Obama said in his victory speech at Grant Park.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer. It's the answer told by lines that stretched around schools and churches in numbers this nation has never seen. By people who waited 3 hours and 4 hours, many for the first time in their lives, because they believed that this time must be different, that their voices could be that difference. It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled and not disabled, Americans who sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of individuals or a collection of red states and blue states. We are and always will be the United States of America.
President-elect Barack Obama, his victory speech in Grant Park in Chicago. Jim Lawrence, as somebody who's been involved in Democratic Party politics for more than 40 years now, your impressions of the just completed election?
Well, of course, like many others, I responded personally with a great deal of emotion to the outcome. And I think all of us felt that we were indeed witnessing history in the making. As I thought about this the other evening, I was reminded about Lyndon Johnson and the civil rights legislation of 64 and 65. And you'll recall that he indicated at that time, when after he signed the bill, that he said to people, "You realize that we are giving the South to the Republican Party for at least a generation." And he was right
and
about
did.
That. But it seems to me in some ways the outcome of the election is the vindication of Lyndon Johnson, and I was just reminded of the strength of Lyndon Johnson and the Republicans and Democrats who voted for that legislation back in the 60s.
One of the real eye-popping things is the fact that Obama won Virginia, the cradle of the Confederacy, mm-hmm. North Carolina by a squeaker, and whether or not you consider Florida to be a southern state, I guess, is depends on your perspective. But he really did mess up that map somewhat, didn't he?
Yes, and that brings me to another thought that I've had, which is that this could be, it's not certain, but it may well be the beginning of a realignment in our politics. You know, we have these major realignments every so often. If we look back over the last 100 years, there's the major realignment of 1896 and another major realignment in 1932, and then with Ronald Reagan, a kind of realignment in 1980, and this may well be another realignment in our politics if the Democratic Party is and President-elect Obama are successful in consolidating the kind of coalition that they built during the course of the campaign, because the fact of the matter is the ethnic character of our country is changing so dramatically that there may be the basis for a new coalition.
Bob Williams, I want to get your impression in just a second as a McCain supporter. But first, Mark Baldwin, your newspaper endorsed Barack Obama. How much flack did you get for that endorsement?
Well, we got, you know, frankly, less than I would have anticipated. Frankly, some of it was sort of over the top, angry. Was over the top, accusing us of always having been in the tank for Obama. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we think we went through a pretty good process looking at issues, and we have reader members on the board. The board itself is not a political monolith, and it was a divided decision. And I think all of us, quite frankly, had great affection for John McCain. Ultimately we're swayed. I think, as a group, we were persuaded that Obama offered the country a chance at a new kind of future and offered a new face to the world, which is important.
And the newspaper did endorse Tom Tiffany, a Republican. It certainly was not a monolithic editorial page on that day.
But Jerry Petrowski,
and Petrowski,
we endorsed,
right.
Yeah.
Bob Williams, as a Republican, as a McCain supporter, your thoughts when you saw Barack Obama declared a victor on Tuesday night?
I thought immediately of Abraham Lincoln, whose statue is out there in Washington, as you know. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now, we're not that all the way, but that certainly was a big, giant, seven-league boot step to get there that night. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
John McCain was very gracious and eloquent in his concession speech, and George W. Bush was very eloquent the next day in congratulating Barack Obama. I'm going to play some short clips from both of those speeches.
A century ago, President Theodore Roosevelt's invitation of Booker T. Washington to dine at the White House was taken as an outrage in many quarters. America today is a world away from the cruel and prideful bigotry of that time. There is no better evidence of this than the election of an African American to the presidency of the United States. Let there be no reason now. Let there be no reason now for any American to fail to cherish their citizenship in this, the greatest nation on earth. Senator Obama has achieved a great thing for himself and for his country. I applaud him for it and offer in my sincere sympathy that his beloved grandmother did not live to see this day. though our faith assures us she is at rest in the presence of her Creator, and so very proud of the good man she helped raise. It'll be a stirring sight to watch President Obama, his wife Michelle, and their beautiful girls step through the doors of the White House. I know millions of Americans will be overcome with pride at this inspiring moment that so many have waited so long. I know Senator Obama's beloved mother and grandparents would have been thrilled to watch the child they raised ascend the steps of the Capitol and take his oath to uphold the Constitution of the greatest nation on the face of the earth.
Some very eloquent, personal, and moving remarks from President George W. Bush and John McCain, and the thoughts of, you know, not just an African-American president, but an African-American first lady and those two beautiful kids going up the steps of the White House. It's a new country in a lot of ways, isn't it?
It's a changed country. It's a changed country.
Certainly is, and I think that the gracious response of Senator McCain and President Bush probably echoed the sentiments that many of us were feeling about this election. I think we all recognize in our heart of hearts that this is an outcome, whatever our political preferences might be, this is an outcome that is very good for the United States on a number of levels, which were mentioned a moment ago, I think.
And, you know, the thing that strikes me, talking about the grandmother and the good man that she raised, we know that John McCain wasn't in complete control of the messages that came right before the election. But as often happens in American politics, it got pretty nasty. He was called a socialist. He was palled around with terrorists. We had that ad about sex education for kindergartners, which made him look like a child molester. We had, I know I'm leaving a lot out. He's going to take your guns away from you. He's a baby killer. All of that stuff. And here, after the election, the good man.
Well, I've always been struck, and by the way, in which defeat brings out our politicians' most magnanimous impulses. I remember in 2000, after Gore was found, the Supreme Court ruled against the Gore campaign, and he made a magnificently magnanimous speech, very moving in its depth and its tone, when he conceded the election to President Bush. And it is fascinating to me how out of defeat comes remarkable eloquence.
Mark Baldwin, executive editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, Jim Lawrence, professor emeritus of history at UW-Marathon County, and also Bob Williams of Ideas Associates, a veteran Republican strategist. We want to hear from you. What do you think of the election? What's your impressions as this country moves into a new chapter? Our phone number is 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, formerly Fiserv Health, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the election. We want to hear from you. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Gary in the town of Ween, you're on Route 51. Hello, Gary.
Hello, great show, and I'm familiar with some of your guests. And the question that I'd like to pose to your guest is the role of the social conservatives in the Republican Party. And it seems that that base has become so powerful. And I think a lot of, in McCain's case, with having Palin as his vice presidential nominee, they've lost the people who are more moderate in the party, the people who actually believe in science, who believe the earth is more than 6,000 years old. And I'm wondering, after the bloodletting that's going to take place if the party is going to try and weaken their control of the party, or if they're going to give in so that the next time around they'll have someone who's even more of a social conservative.
Gary, thanks so much for the call. Bob Williams, a lot of the moderate Republicans ended up going down to defeat, and some analysts have said, well, it's the hardcore people that we've got left right now. Does that pose a problem to the party?
Oh, it definitely does. It narrowed the field for the Republicans, and the biggest thing that happened was the kids, and when I say kids, I say 18 to 29 in voting. It fenced them out. That percentage of 75-80% of them voting for Obama has got to send a message to the Republican. I know Republicans who were actually chided by their own kids and drawn over, if not to vote for Obama. The kids were leading this nationwide. And if they stay in the game is different. I don't know if they'll stay in the game. I don't know if they have the enthusiasm and the ability to just carry on now without a huge figure to work for. But I think the Republican Party cannot be led by one part of the party. They're fine people. We love their votes, but they're not me, and they're not many people I know. And I think if they look around them and be honest, they'll say, we have been fenced out as a reasonably large minority, but we're not large enough. We got to tolerate a lot more than we have been.
One of the interesting aspects of the campaign, especially the last 4 to 6 weeks, to me, was the way in which it seemed to me, Bob may have a comment on this, it seemed to me that somewhere in the McCain campaign, a decision was made to run this campaign as a base campaign. I suppose I'm, in a sense, echoing Bob's sentiments here, but it seems to me that once they decided on going in the direction of a campaign that sort of strengthened the base, you know, brought the Republican Party base together, they really forfeited the support of independent voters as well as some moderate Republicans.
Well, I can think of two things. You bring in Steve Schmidt, who was a protege of Karl Rove, to run your campaign for you, and you choose Sarah Palin as your vice presidential pick instead mm-hmm. of Joe yeah. Lieberman, which is apparently the person that John McCain really wanted.
The problem with the, in my opinion, the problem with the philosophy that was operating was that the Republican base is not sufficiently large with which to win an election.
No.
Somebody didn't see that, and I'm still a little bit puzzled by it.
Well, and the base hurt the party in the end because Sarah Palin was a Hail Mary pass. It was designed to keep that base solid because they had left McCain. He was way out in left field.
What would have happened if he'd picked Joe Lieberman at that convention?
We would have had the first Jewish vice president. That is one thing that would have happened.
but I mean, there could have been people walking right out of that convention.
I'm being facetious. You're right. There would have been people walking out of the convention. And I wish he had picked, no question, it, Lieberman. A very qualified vice president. But politics being politics, it's a small base. It might be 18-22% of the Republican vote. But at his stage, he couldn't lose that vote. Some people determined.
I want to just ask you both, I guess beginning with you, Bob, how do you think the Republican Party will remake itself over the next 4 years, or will it? What do you expect to see in 4 years?
Well, I'm of the Mel Laird School of Politics. As Glenn knows, I worked for Mel for many years. I think the wise men and the wise women of the party are going to come forth, and there's going to be discussions that you people in the newspaper world and the television world are not going to know about, and you'd like to know about. But you're not going to be in the closed rooms where there's going to be...
If you hear anything, you got to tell us.
Right. There are going to be charts on the wall. And those charts are going to tell exactly what we know and what we saw. It's where the votes are, why is Utah a marginal state now. Good Lord, Utah. But that's because there are some very sane heads in Utah that didn't like what they were hearing coming out of the McCain campaign, and particularly Sarah Palin. And so there, I think it's the wiser heads are going to say, that's enough. We love you. We love your vote. On certain issues, we're going to be with you, but you ain't going to run this party anymore.
Gary, from the town of Ween, talked about people who believe the Earth is only 6,000 years old, and this general anti-intellectual or anti-science bent that's prevalent among some people in the Republican base. Jim Lawrence, as somebody who's a university professor, does that alarm you, that there are still people who think the Earth is 6,000 years old?
It doesn't surprise me, because anyone who has studied American history understands that there is a long history of anti-intellectualism in American life. It may not represent a majority opinion, but it's certainly not surprising that viewpoint expresses itself in this election and in our modern politics. If you are asking my personal opinion, I mean, I find it a little disturbing that kind of an intellectual outlook can dominate one of our major political parties, if that's the case.
It does make it hard for you to attract younger, college-educated voters. So, Bob, we're going to have to pick this up after our news break. We're almost out of time here for this segment. And if you want to join us, please give us a call, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Jim Lawrence, Bob Williams, Mark Baldwin, I'm Glenn Moberg. Route 51 continues after this news.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Helen Bader Foundation, sponsor of the Fred Lindner Prize for Social Innovation, recognizing Wisconsinites who have redirected their life's work after age 50 toward making a difference in social needs. Details at hbf.org.
We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg, and we are discussing the election results this afternoon with Jim Lawrence, Professor Emeritus of History at UW-Marathon County, a man who's been involved in Democratic politics for the last 40 years. Bob Williams, Republican analyst and President of Ideas Associates of Stevens Point, and Mark Baldwin, Executive Editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the historic election we just had and what it portends for the future? Our phone number is 261-6371. That's 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Bob Williams, when we were so rudely interrupted by our news break, we were talking about the rift in the Republican Party between, economic conservatives and social conservatives.
I disagree with Jim a bit on the delineation. I don't think it's as large as they sound large, the people who are the guns, gays, gods part of the Republican Party. I really don't. But I do think that there are many people that followed. Lee Dreyfus, the biggest laughs and applause he got in his campaign from the back of the bus would be when he described the federal government. It's defend the shores, deliver the mail, and get the hell out of my life. That was Lee Dreyfus's laugh line. You can't give $700 billion to the banks of the United States and say they're only there to defend the shores and deliver the mail. The socialism part of the Republican Party showed itself through, and the president wanted that. So I think it's going to be when the wise men get together and they get in that room, they're going to point out to these people who are just economic Republicans, You too have to back off, and you other people are going to back off. Otherwise, we are consigned to be a minority status for a long time.
Since we're talking about the future of the Republican Party, I want to play a bit of a news story that the man who actually was the bureau chief here in Wausau for a long time, Gil Halstead, filed on election night. He was in Waukesha at Republican Party headquarters, and he heard from two Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner and Paul Ryan, who had different ideas of how to progress in the years ahead.
Disappointment was in the air last night as the Republican faithful gathered at a hotel in Waukesha to watch John McCain concede the race. But veteran GOP Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner urged them not to lose hope.
The Democrats have been able to blame our current president for everything that goes wrong, and they aren't going to be able to do that anymore. And this is the time for we Republicans to pin the tail on the donkey whenever they do things that people don't like.
But fellow Republican Congressman Paul Ryan says he's looking forward to rebuilding the Republican majority in Congress after what he calls a cathartic election. He says the way to do that is to work across the aisle whenever possible.
And then where there are issues where we do have difference of opinions, we shouldn't just be bitter. We shouldn't just oppose them. We should put out different proposals as alternatives and say, here's how we would do things differently. And at the end of that kind of a process, you get better government. And to me, that's what we should be doing. And that's where we have gone wrong as a Republican Party.
But both Ryan and Sensenbrenner say they are looking forward to a victory party for a conservative presidential nominee in 2012. Gil Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we should remember that when Lyndon Johnson had his landslide over Barry Goldwater in 1964, it wasn't too much later before Ronald Reagan had picked up that mantle and changed politics in the opposite direction. So, Jim Lawrence, do you think that the Republicans are going to be able to pin the tail on the donkeys in the years ahead?
Well, let me answer that question in this way. I'm not sure why anyone wanted to be president just now, because whichever of the candidates won this particular election was going to face problems that while not insurmountable, certainly represent quite possibly the greatest challenge we've had since the 1930s, economic challenge that we've had since the 1930s. Do I think the Republicans can pull it together? Well, I mean, anyone who studies history understands that these things are cyclical. And if, as Bob suggests, if the Paul Ryans of the Republican Party and the moderates in the Republican Party assert themselves, it would not surprise me if they came back, with some degree of success within 4 years. They'd be facing another kind of a problem with an incumbent president, of course, in the next election that mm-hmm. raises other kinds of issues. I think Bob is right when he says that this particular economic environment was deadly for anyone wearing the Republican label. Whether that's fair or not, I mean, that happened in this past election. The economy kind of overruled a lot of other considerations.
Let's go back to the phones. David in Mosinee, you're on Route 51. Hello, David.
Yeah, hi. I was just commenting that I thought that one of the reasons that John McCain lost, and a lot of the friends that I have that our Republicans are more conservative, and they stayed home. They were upset with the Republican Party for bringing John McCain in. They were happy to see that they brought Sarah Palin in because she was more conservative, but they thought that John McCain was way too far to the middle. So they just stayed home.
And Bob Williams, you do have to keep that base in line, don't you?
We did. But now we have to talk to them, and they have to join us. We are not going to join them. By the way, Jim Sensenbrenner was doing the usual, feeding raw meat to that Waukesha crowd. One of our three daughters lives in Waukesha County, and she tells us stories of Jim Sensenbrenner. I doubt she voted for him, but I know she voted for McCain. But that made Paul Ryan look all the better. We need more Paul Ryans, and we have more Paul Ryans, and he can be a star.
I think if they go way too far to the middle like they are with John McCain, you're just going to keep on going down the road of losing. The Republicans are just losing, going to keep on losing because they're losing their base, the conservatives, you know, the smaller government. Now, a lot of us ain't happy with President Bush with expanding the government and everything like that. But to keep going down the road of turning into Democrat light is not going to help matters either for the Republican Party.
David, thanks so much for the phone call. Mark, any observations?
Well, I have a question for both Bob and Jim. What is going to be the continuing impact of our increasingly diverse society on both parties? You know, we saw one of the stats that I read not too long ago is that something like 35 or 40% of all Americans under 35 or 40 are people of color, and that's my kid's generation. My oldest is a college senior, voted for the first time, and while I think she was smitten to some extent by Obama, it wasn't as big a deal to her to see him elected as I think it is to some of us who are older. The society is going to continue to get more diverse. What is that going to do to the two parties? And I guess I'd start with Bob.
And especially with the fact that the Republicans actually lost Hispanic votes this time around,
yes,
compared
that,
to the last two election cycles.
Yes, they did. And that's why the Republicans have to back off and have to say to the young in particular, to keep them in the mix, and find things that they want and are for. Now, Jim was saying it well earlier. This is a mess the country is in. Obama is going to be judged 2 years and 4 years from now. What have you done for us lately? They're going to forget this past. It's going to be his problem ahead. That's why it's such a strain on that party, the Dems, to make things right fast, to do things differently. And so if the people are then saying, it's your fault, what is their fallback? Who do they go back to? There's only two major parties. So what are the Republicans going to do between now and 2 years from now to bring themselves up so that your daughter, Mark, can say, hey, Dad, this man, Paul Ryan, or this woman from the state of Maine, they're not bad, are they? But right now, the young are saying, good God, not again. And so we've got a job to do. We've got to be salesmen, the Republican, to sell the other groups that are there that are for sale, because they're on the make, these young people. And we got to get off guns, gays, and God, because they don't really give a darn about that.
We've been talking about the direction of the Republican Party. We're going to take a short break, and when we're back, we're going to talk about the future of the Democratic Party now that they have these majorities in Washington and in Madison. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
If you just joined us, I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. We are talking about the election and what it portends for the future with an all-star panel of guests. Dr. Jim Lawrence, Professor Emeritus of History at UW-Marathon County, Bob Williams, Republican Analyst, President of Ideas Associates of Stevens Point, and Mark Baldwin, Executive Editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. We do want to hear from you. We've got about 13 minutes to take your phone calls at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Before the break, Bob, you were saying that the Democrats will have no one to blame but themselves. Sounded a lot like comments Dan Mielke made to me on election night. Dan, the Republican who was put up against Dave Obey this time around, went down to defeat, and he had a warning for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, this is the toughest time because you got to deal with people who had their hopes up, and you know you got to listen to them. And whether you win or whether you lose, it's a highly emotional time right now. So that's a little tough. But the rest of the race has been great.
Obama is going to be president. He's going to have solid majorities in both the Senate and the House.
What if you had to give him any cautionary advice and he was listening to Dan Mielke, what would you say to him?
They're in trouble. You can't blame anybody, you know. If they have the majority on both sides and they have a veto-proof majority and he's the president, everything that happens is going to fall on their shoulders and they're going to have to deal with it. So they need to be really careful with what they do and the decisions they make, that they don't actually do more harm to their cause in the process, because there's no blaming somebody else this time around.
That was Republican Dan Mielke, who was defeated by Dave Obie on election night, and just a few blocks away at the Labor Temple. We also asked Dave Obie about the future of the Democratic Party and whether he thought Barack Obama should go slow or go fast.
Well, the important thing is to understand this country is in huge trouble. We're stuck in two wars, and we're stuck with an economy that's rapidly declining. We've got to put together action on the job front almost immediately. We've got to deal with the health care problem. We have a whole list of problems on the plate. And I suspect you'll see Obama calling in leaders of both parties to try to find a way to get a consensus about how you move forward.
We have heard from some pundits that Mr. Obama has to be careful and the Democrats have to be careful not to move the country too far left too quickly. Your reaction to that thought?
Left, schmeft, up, down. I think all that talk is nonsense. We need action and action now on the job front. We need to deal with the health care problems. Some of the problems we have are very large problems and they're fundamental. I don't think the public thinks in left or right terms. I think they think in terms of problem solving or ignoring problems, and we've got to get about problem solving.
How many trillions of dollars in debt are we right now?
Thanks to George Bush, it's about double what it was 8 years ago.
And isn't that going to constrain his options?
Of course it will. But you cannot approach this economy like Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover thought that you had to retrench and do less. This government is going to have to step up and stimulate the economy, or we will see unemployment go to record numbers. We just cannot allow that to happen.
Dave Obie on election night, left schmeft, Jim Lawrence. Dave Obie, the chairman of the powerful House Appropriations Committee, wants to put the pedal to the metal.
Well, my response would be to say that what the Democratic Party needs to do is make sure that it is able to identify the needs of the majority of the American public, that it has to think in terms of meeting the needs of the broad middle classes, that it needs to address the health care issue, as the congressman suggested. For economic reasons, I think the fiscal stimulus has to come immediately. I understand they're trying to put something on President Bush's desk, but if it doesn't work, it has to come in January.
And for those of us who just joined us, Jim Lawrence has known Dave Obie for many years, helped him with his autobiography. This was typical Dave Obie.
Absolutely. Vintage Dave Obie.
And it was also very good advice.
I think to respond to your question, Glenn, the Democratic Party also needs to understand how to work across the aisle. I expect that from President-elect Obama. Just watching the way he ran his campaign, he was very disciplined, no nonsense. I think that we will see a president who is willing to reach across the aisle and try to cooperate. And I am certain that there are responsible Republicans who will respond to that invitation.
What do you think of his selection of Rahm Emanuel as his chief of staff? Emanuel, known as a pit bull on Washington. John Boehner, who is going to be heading the Republicans in Congress, said this isn't reaching across the aisle.
I understand that. I understand why he selected Emanuel, because Emanuel has experience both in the Congress, working with the Congress, and he has experience in the White House. He understands how to get things done, and President-elect Obama will need to have someone who can go to the Hill and talk talk turkey to the Democrats on the Hill in particular. So I understand why he selected Emanuel. However, to respond to your other point, it is true that he has a reputation of being a hard-nosed a politician and has been known to step on toes. So we will see which element in his character dominates.
What I heard is maybe Obama selected this tough guy not to be tough with the Republicans, but to be tough with Democrats who might be trying to push him too far, too fast.
He also selected a man in Emanuel who had Wall Street experience. I think that people forget where he came from. Mm. This man has had real financial experience. And a friend of mine, we're presumably writing a book. It's called Deliver Us from Egos. And and you got Pelosi and Reid, and I think Obama can say to them quietly, you owe me because I pulled a lot of those Democrats who won along with me. I owe you, but not nearly as much. And now let's sit down, and we're not going to have Pelosi and Reid coming through with their left of left agendas. And he is the one that has to do it. No, I want 8 years. I don't want just four. And if you do that, you're going to give them the next presidency.
You know, what I'm struck by in part, the Emanuel selection makes me wonder how many Chicagoans are going to be in this administration. And Glenn and I are both natives of Chicago. And you know, the thing that strikes me is, as the labels are tossed out about partisanship and liberal or conservative, what have you, is I think that the unifying trait of most Chicago pals, at least the good ones, is that they are remarkably pragmatic because it's a diverse city. You know, the Democratic mayor of Chicago, with whom Obama has made peace and gets along, is every Republican's favorite Democrat, and that's Richard M. Daley. The only way to survive in that environment is to be pretty pragmatic. And I suspect what you're going to see with Emanuel, if Valerie Jarrett joins the campaign, joins the administration, if David Axelrod, who's got deep Chicago roots, joins the administration, I think you're going to see a lot of pragmatism because my guess is these are folks who, rather than look left for the best ideas, right for the best ideas, they want the ideas that move the country forward.
I've got an old friend in Chicago who's a rock and roll disc jockey, seriously, and he said, can you believe it? We're electing a guy who's a Chicago White Sox fan, and he's got Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters on his iPod.
The White Sox thing does great.
I think there was another great Republican senator from Illinois, Everett Dirksen, who gave them all advice. He said, one of my great principles is be flexible. And these people, the Pelosi's, the Reid's, as well as Obama, have to be flexible now.
Everett McKinley Dirksen, a mellifluous voice.
I wish I had that voice, too.
So do I. We've got time to squeeze in one more call. Let's go to Bill in St. Germain. Bill, you're on Route 51. Hello, Bill.
Hi. I have a question. Is this going to be the last election where we dominate the campaign with character assassinations?
That's a good question, and we saw a lot of it this time, and it didn't work.
I'd say
and
it
not
fell
only
on
the
its
presidential,
face.
Not only on the presidential level, but in North Carolina, with the Libby Dole and Kay Hagan race, where you know, there was the implication that somehow Hagan was less than godly in her approach to politics.
Well, we could all hope that the public will change because all the polls, and I'm not a poll person, but all the polls show that nepotism works with the voting public. Maybe we're getting a more educated voting public as we're getting more and more of the young people into it, and some of the old sages as well. So I think that's another one of the changes that we could well see, that the wise heads, the Pelosi's and the Reid's, the Obama's on one side, McCain and his ilk and the Republicans will all say, gang, let's give them a better run for their money and stay on or even keel.
Bill, do you think it's the end of guilt by association in political campaigns?
Well, I hope it is with Elizabeth Dole going down, but it might mean they just want to refine it better.
We got time for final words here from Jim Lawrence.
I think that it's possible that that kind of campaigning suffered a real blow this time around, but I am realistic enough to know that sometimes the politicians themselves don't even control what's being done in their name. And so I don't think we're going to see the disappearance of character assassination or character politics, but I do think that this election result has dealt it a serious blow.
Mark Baldwin?
You know, I hope going forward that we remember the ways, though, in which good language, good rhetoric did move people this election cycle. And it wasn't just Obama. McCain had his moments. He connects in a different way, but can be very, very eloquent. You know, the great ones, Lincoln and Roosevelt and Reagan, have always been able to shape public opinion and to move people in and move the country by virtue of their rhetoric. Words have power. I hope we learned that or relearned that lesson again.
And that is it. We're out of time. We want to thank today's guests, Dr. James Lawrence, Professor Emeritus of History at UW-Marathon County, Bob Williams, Republican Analyst and President of Ideas Associates of Stevens Point, and Mark Baldwin, the Executive Editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. Thanks to our Executive Producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. Thanks to all of you who called in with your questions and comments. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.